Welcome to the Where Is My Guru show. This is Jessica, your host and guide. Where Is My Guru is an online radio show and podcast that create a sacred space to share stories, messages, and ideas. We are your virtual sangha, connecting you with teachers, leaders, and experts in the fields of yoga and wellness, mindful business, and service. Where Is My Guru, leading you back to you. Hey, gurus, this is your host and guide, Jessica. Welcome to the Where Is My Guru show. I think I try to sound more Indian every time I say that. Where Is My Guru show? Brandon Cox from Core Power Yoga, he has the desire to call me up on the phone every day and say, "Where is my guru?" And I say, "It is within you, Brandon. It is within you. Where is my guru?" Speaking of Brandon Cox, we are going to have a Guru Expert Series with Brandon Cox all about mindful business starting in a couple of weeks in October. So excited to check those out. Brandon Cox is one of the co-founders of Core Power Yoga. They have 65 locations all over the U.S. So if he can give any kind of mindful tips to yoga studio owners, I think he's definitely the one to do it. But today we are starting our part one of a 3 series with Katie Silcox, Para Yogini. Check out her website, healthyhappysexylife.com. So this is part one of 3. We are talking about Ayurveda, the science of life. Enjoy. Hi, this is Jessica with Where Is My Guru, and I am here with Katie Silcox, and you are listening to our Guru Expert Series, Gurus in the Garden. This is a series of podcasts where we are shedding some light on Ayurveda, Tantra, and the Divine Feminine. And today we are going to be talking about Ayurveda and kind of what it means to be healthy, happy, and sexy, and how Ayurveda plays can play a role in really helping you to experience a different form of health and wellness and balance in your life. So, hey, Katie, how are you?
I'm good, Jessica. Happy to be here with you as usual.
It's a beautiful garden.
It is.
What do you tell? Let everybody know, like, kind of set the scene.
We are in Denver, Colorado in the summer, and we're sitting beside a goddess. It's a huge tree. I'm not sure what kind it is. It's kind of shading us from the sun, and we just have beautiful plants all around. And yeah.
You just ate some yummy food that
we
Katie made.
We ate some food
Katie
I cooked.
Made.
Yeah, we're happy.
So Katie's been on our show before talking about Ayurveda, and we're really honored that that you can come and spend some kind of like one-on-one time to kind of go in deeper to this subject. And I think for somebody that really has been, you know, I'm sort of like a novice to Ayurveda. I've heard about it a lot. I've been introduced to it a lot. I know kind of the ideas around it, but I'm having a hard time really integrating it into my life. And I know the few things I've done have made a huge difference. So I think just like really defining Ayurveda would be kind of a great place to start.
Sure. Well, Ayurveda means life science, the science of everything that's living, and also the science of how to live a life in the most empowering way possible, and more importantly, how to live in accordance as best we can with the Dharma, in other words, the laws of nature. And if we can align with those laws of nature, then we'll be our healthiest, happiest, sexiest that we can be, right? And so it's this idea that there are these operating laws, and we want to learn what they are and we want to humble ourselves in a way in terms of our own ego and our own ambitions, which oftentimes get in the way of the laws of nature. So it's a way of coming back into, first of all, tuning into what those laws are and feeling them in our own bodies and in the seasons. And Ayurveda really, I think one thing that's helpful in terms of defining it is to separate it a little bit from India for a second in order to let it be more accessible for us in our lives. And what I hear from a lot of people is that they learn about Ayurveda, but it feels quite exotic and quite Indian, and they think they have to eat Indian food, and you know, that it's kind of removed because of its antiquity. And really what Ayurveda is a lot of what your grandma knew and your great-grandma knew, and especially just any indigenous cultural tradition that has honored the earth has known. And so Ayurveda is essentially folk medicine, whether it be from India or from Mexico or from, you know, my grandma who lived in Tennessee. Mm-hmm. It's what she knew, and she knew how to do things to help her children when they were sick, and she gave them the right spices in their soup. And we've kind of lost that a little bit in modern day, and so Ayurveda, I would say, is just turning back to nature and trusting her timing.
Mm. Ayurveda has, you know, while has some kind of like defining, because we're all individuals, mm-hmm. right? Like everybody has an individual, I guess you could say, I know, a constitution.
Mm-hmm.
And so it has a lot to do with us learning about ourselves, so mm-hmm. we kind of can know who we are, what we need,
mm-hmm.
how we're made up. So can you talk a little bit about how we can define that through the lens of Ayurveda?
Yes. So Ayurveda, the Ayurvedic cosmology divides reality into some boxes that look discrete, but sometimes they overlap. And these boxes they call the five elements, and many of you will be familiar with them. It's earth, water, fire, air, and space. And we can understand most, if not all, the processes that happen in the world, and particularly in nature, in terms of these elements. And what happens is the elements get together and, I say, kind of play around with one another. And so you get water that plays around with earth. And if you think about what happens when you mix water with mud, you know, with earth, you get mud. And we call that kapha. And if you mix fire with a little bit of moisture or oil, which if you look at a candle, you know, a candle looks like it's fire, but if you go look at it really closely, you'll see any wick will have a certain little amount of oil, and that's the water element. So fire mixed with a little bit of the water equals pitta, right? We call that mixture pitta. And similarly with air and space, when they mix together, we get what we call vata. And so these three mixtures of the five elements are called the three doshas. And dosha means fault, like a fault line. And so the idea is that the nature of the universe is inherently chaotic. It's inherently unstable, right? So these elements are constantly moving around with one another, creating a certain amount of instability. And from that instability, you get reality. You get Jess, you're sitting over there, and I'm Katie, and I'm sitting over here. And because of our particular mixtures and their ongoing relationship to one another, we get individual entities that are temporary, right, that in terms of their elements. So Ayurveda says, okay, so if that's true and there are these fundamental ways that nature plays around with itself, then when Jess is born, her mixture will look different than Katie's, and that's what makes her unique. And the idea is that you were born with this perfect combination of those particular elements and in turn their doshas that make you the best box, if you will, for fulfilling your unique purpose. So in Ayurveda, you want to try to go back to that original beautiful combination that you had upon your conception, because that will be the best combination that will serve your happiness. So that's a little bit of a abstract definition. But in terms of the physical reality and the daily reality and the mundane day-to-day, you can think about it like in terms of how these elements show up in your body. Like fire shows up in the body as heat and rash and redness and even loose stools and anything that has to do with an overheating in the body. And air shows up, in the mind, it shows up in terms of intensity and anger. In with vata, with air, it shows up in terms of constipation and gas and dry skin and jet lag and exhaustion, mental movement like anxiety. That's all manifestations of too much of the vata dosha. And then with kapha, it's things like mucus and even lethargy, and one could even say depression. Depression manifests in all three ways. But kapha is just a little more of that heavier feeling in our bodies and our minds. So what we try to do in Ayurveda is figure out, well, what am I currently experiencing in terms of these elements? Because if I can figure that out, then I can cultivate their opposite qualities, and I can bring myself back into balance.
Can you maybe use yourself as an example and kind of talk about what dosha you are,
mm-hmm.
and some of the things that you do and watch for
mm-hmm.
in your life, just to kind of give somebody like a snapshot of it, like a day-to-day?
Sure. Well, before I do that, it's important to understand that you have what's called a prakriti and a vikriti. The prakriti is what you were born with, right? That's your unique dosha you were born with. And then a vikriti is just what you happen to have out of balance right now. So I think it's really hard. I know everyone's excited about learning what dosha they are. And there are great online quizzes that you can go and take. And most good Ayurveda books will have kind of a dosha questionnaire in the back. And those are fun, and those can be illuminating just to get you to start thinking. But it's been my experience that it's really, really hard to know your dosha unless you meet with a true Ayurveda master, like a Dr. Ladd or someone that really knows a lot, that can really tune into your pulse and look at your physical body, and they might be able to give you a good idea of what you were when you were born, right? But I encourage people not to worry about their prakriti too much, but to focus on their vikriti. In other words, what's out of balance in you right now? You could have been born a very light and airy type. You know, vata types tend to have thinner bone structures, and they tend to be a lot longer and lankier, and they tend to have kind of kinky hair, with each hair kind of has a mind of its own, right? These types, and they tend towards anxiety. These types, oftentimes what you'll see is they'll gain a lot of weight, right? And so you look at them and you say, oh, well, this person's a kapha, right? They're big and heavy and round, and they have a lot of extra kapha, right? Kapha is fat. Kapha is that excess heaviness. And you would be tempted to say, oh, you're a kapha, when in fact, they're actually a vata who just put on a lot of fat as a protective mechanism for their vatagenic nature. So, in other words, just figure out what's going on with you right here and right now, today, and which of these doshas does it fit into. So for me personally, I probably am a classic pitta vata. You know, we're usually a combination of two. But I don't worry about that too much. I just think about, well, what's going on with me today? So in my life, I'm traveling a lot. I'm doing a lot of airplane travel, and my vata can tend to get up a little bit out of whack. And so I would try to do things. The characteristics of vata are cool and dry energies, and those are good. But when you have too much of them, you get cold in your body. You can tend towards constipation. You can feel dry in your skin, and most importantly, you feel scattered and spacey and anxious. And so if I'm feeling the energy of scatteredness or spaciness or exhaustion or anxiety, then I can do the exact opposite of the qualities of vata, which are cool and dry. And so I would eat things that were warm and moist, and I would take warm baths, and I would put unctuous things on my body like oil or things that balance out the energies of dryness. And that in turn will start to help the mind. Yeah. So daily, just figure out what's going on, what really are you dealing with, and if you're dealing with more heat, then you can use cooling remedies like coconut oil and mint.
One of the things I really love about Ayurveda, and I think, you know, being somebody that I definitely have been afflicted by this, and I don't know if I could have a name for it or not, but it's like the end-all, be-all syndrome. You know, like you go to a yoga class and you're like, this is going to fix everything. Or you get a massage and you're like, oh, my problems are going to be gone after this, or something like, you know, I think as you kind of start to find, your way into yoga or something like Ayurveda or like alternative health therapies, mm-hmm. at first there's this idea that this is going to fix me.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the really beautiful things that I've learned on the path is that we're all really, it's like an everyday, like we're caretakers mm-hmm. of like these divine qualities inside of us, and so we need to take care of our body, and that's an mm-hmm. everyday mm-hmm. commitment.
Mm-hmm.
And the more you get to know about your body, the easier it does become, right? Mm-hmm. You know, would you say that the more you get to know yourself, the easier it becomes?
No.
I mean, I think
that sounds really pretty, Jessica.
Well,
I mean, yes and no. So I'm partially an agora. You know, Dr. Svoboda is one of my favorite teachers, and he talks about prana and your body, and in a way, your body is like the sacrificial burning ground for your life. And you can do the best you can to take care of your body, and at the end of the day, gravity's going to win. And you're going to end up as worm food. You know, the nature of this physical reality is decomposition. So let's just put that out there. Like, you know, sometimes Dr. Claudia, another teacher I worked with, says, Katie, you know, sometimes you have to actually sacrifice your body and your health to what you're doing, you know. And she's the biggest proponent of anyone I know of self-care. And so for the grand dame of self-care to admit that, I think is important for us to remember that we are here on this planet to do work, to burn karma. And a part of that means the body will suffer, right? The body will struggle. And so that's why Ayurveda is so radically important, because it will help us slow down that eventual and inevitable process of decay. Does it get easier with time? Maybe. I don't mean to be the grim reaper of Ayurveda, but I don't think so. I think we just get better at dealing with it.
Mm.
So that's why if you are listening to this show, don't wait any longer to start tapping into this wisdom and giving your body the time that it needs to repair and heal. And a lot of it is like just really knowing that the body needs to know that you mean business. So it's not enough to just lay down, you know, in your hectic day for 10 minutes and do some deep breathing. Like, the body does require an extended period of healing time to really detoxify and repair. So that's the bad news. The good news is there are small and little things that you can incorporate into your daily routine that you can start slow and take your little tiny Ayurveda pebble and throw it in the pond of your life, and it will definitely ripple out. Even something as simple, you mentioned before we started this interview, something simple as tongue scraping that takes 2 seconds. And that can have a profound effect on your health. It literally scrapes a layer of gunk that your body is trying to get rid of out of your mouth off of your tongue every day. I mean, that's one way that you can immediately improve your digestion. And that takes two seconds, right?
Well, thanks for clearing that up, Katie. You know, I agree. I totally, you know, I agree with and I love the way you put it.
But, you know, and then we can, you know,
but there's not a quick fix is what I mean. Like, you know,
there's
not a quick fix. So the more that we can accept you know, the path that we're on, whether it's a path to decomposition or the liberation of our soul, mm-hmm. you know, because that's really, you know, the body is just a vessel,
yeah.
you know, for the work that we're supposed
yeah,
to be
yeah.
doing. Then I think, you know, it becomes really for me kind of sacred and beautiful in engaging with
mm-hmm.
this process of
mm-hmm.
taking care of myself.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a process, it's an unfolding. It's not I know that I have to get up tomorrow morning and drink my lemon water.
Right.
And then in order for me to feel the same way that I
mm-hmm.
felt today, I have
mm-hmm.
to get up the next morning and
right.
do it, kind of like meditation.
Right.
And I just like to point that out. Maybe it's because I struggled with that for a really long time, and I still see that those
mm-hmm.
things coming up of just really making a commitment
mm-hmm.
to myself.
Right.
You know, like valuing myself enough
right.
to commit to myself to do these things.
Right.
You know?
Right.
And I don't know. I just that's definitely my message to be.
Well, and to kind of complete that thought, at the far reaches, when I say we're decomposing, I do mean the physical. And so when you come to your lemon water in the morning, or we oil our body, or we put a candle on and meditate with some good essential oils around, you know, all of those things are messages to that part of you that is eternal, like you said, that soul, that I'm doing the best I can to take care of this temple for as long as I can to be able to know that, right? So it is a beautiful experience. Let's keep doing it.
So obviously, you know, we know that there's some steps that we can take to know our doshas, so mm-hmm. we can kind of know how to take care of ourselves. But there mm-hmm. are some things, and you mentioned one, we mentioned a couple. We mentioned drinking lemon water, tongue scraping. There are some things that we can start to do,
right.
even if we're not quite sure,
right.
you know, what our doshas are.
Everybody can do it.
So what are some other things that we can start incorporating into our lives?
Ayurvedically?
Yeah.
I would say timing is important. Getting on a regular routine in terms of when you wake up in the morning and when you eat breakfast and when you eat lunch and when you eat dinner and when you go to bed can be extremely, it sounds simple, but that alone is, I think, one of the more challenging things for people living in our world. But to get on a regular schedule with those kind of things gives the body a message. And what the body does is it prepares itself, whether it be the enzymes that you need to digest the meal or the melatonin that it's going to begin to secrete because it knows we're heading to bed soon. The body's amazing, and she starts preparing those things for you when she knows that that's going to happen. But if there isn't a regular routine, then those chemicals aren't necessarily ready for us, and then we get things like bad digestion and insomnia. So just having a regular routine, definitely getting up in the morning and scraping your tongue and going to the bathroom and drinking lemon water to help your bowels start to move is wonderful. I would say meditation is a great daily routine to start to get into, because meditation has many levels of benefit, but I think in terms of Ayurveda, what it does is it helps us digest. It helps us digest what happened to us yesterday or that morning or the week before, and that digestive process helps us digest our food even. So having a daily meditation, oiling your body is super helpful, especially we're in Denver, and so it's very dry here. So in a climate where it's cool or cold and dry, something like sesame oil will keep you warm. So if you're in the middle of winter, sesame oil is good. Or if you just tend to be the kind of person that gets cold and dry a lot, sesame oil is a good one. Sesame can mix well with sunflower oil, and that's a good oil for most body types. Coconut oil is really good for those of you who have a warm body temperature, hot, tend to run hot, or you're in the middle of summer. It's a cooling oil. And then for us kapha types, you may not even need oil if you're a kapha type. Some of us feel like our skin's already moist enough, and so kapha is like a little light dry brushing on their skin. That can be helpful. And yeah, you mentioned before that you were taking triphala, and I think that's a great herb that most people can take, and it's a colon tonifier. So it doesn't act as a laxative. It's just a good detoxifier that keeps the organs actually running the way they need to run, and it's non-habit forming. So taking some sort of additional detoxification herbal support, I think, is helpful, especially living in the modern reality where we just eat so much crap. Even those of us that are eating organically and from the farmer's market, there's still stuff that gets in our food, like hormones, and there's stuff in the water. I mean, and so just to have some herbal support, you know, I read the other day that triphala is also one of the highest vitamin C providers on the planet. And so doing some sort of herbal support is good. I think another really good routine is to drink ginger tea and ginger water. That ginger, when it's fresh, is usually tridoshic, meaning that it's good for everybody's body type. And it has a special prabhava, which is a yogi word for superpower, meaning that ginger, there are other things that I think do this, like garlic and ginseng, and they're just some, turmeric is one of them. They're these amazing herbs that they can go into the body and do whatever is needed. So if you're a pitta, they'll help reduce your inflammation. If you're a vata, they'll help stimulate digestive moistness. If you're a kapha, they'll help you reduce excess fat. They go in and they bring balance. And so learning about other plant medicine allies that bring balance into the system is huge. especially for us, Tulsi, for example, is another example of a wonderful herb that has that adaptogenic characteristic. Adaptogen meaning it can adapt to anything, and it helps you adapt to anything. So learning about adaptogen herbs that aren't super heavy, Tulsi's kind of light and hot, whereas herbs that get a lot of press in the Ayurveda world are ashwagandha and shatavari, which are nutritive tonics and reproductive support herbs, and they're wonderful, but they tend to be a little bit heavy. And so before you start taking a lot of these heavy ojas-building herbs, we have to make sure we have the digestion to be able to eat them, right, and digest them. So learning about herbs, I think, is really good. And
so how would you make ginger tea?
How would you make ginger tea?
I mean, lemon water, but if somebody's
right.
like, I've got some ginger, I want to make some tea right now.
Sure. So you go to the store and you buy a ginger root, you peel it.
Fresh ginger, not in a jar.
Fresh ginger root, please. Yep. Fresh ginger root. You don't have to peel it. I don't peel it, but I see a lot of people peel it.
So you just throw the root right in the water?
No, you slice it, you know,
nice little,
I don't know, less than an inch, you know, half an inch slices, and you throw it in the water, and you boil it. You boil it for about 15 minutes pretty hard boil.
How much?
How much water?
A whole root?
No, I would say like maybe 2 thumb sizes. I like my ginger tea strong, so I guess it just depends. But yeah, like a thumb size amount, or if you're me, you can put 4 or 5 thumb sizes. I tend to go overboard. I like the strong medicinal concoctions. I must have been some sort of witch with a cauldron in the past life. But yeah, you boil it up and you can drink it all day long, and it's so good for us. It's so helpful. It reduces gas and bloating, and ginger is the panacea.
And so you're talking about, these are great suggestions, and I'm going to make some ginger, that's what I was asking, so I want to make ginger tea when I go home. If anybody tries it, please let us know how it works for you. But there's also some more, intense things that you can do that I've heard about, like panchakarma, special massage, two-handed massage. Uh-huh. So there's definitely some, as you develop kind of, your relationship with mm-hmm. Ayurveda and how it integrates into your life, can you talk a little bit about panchakarma, because it's a big word,
mm-hmm.
and I think a lot of people are like, what? You know,
yeah.
What is it? What does it mean?
Sure. So panchakarma is a methodology for, it can be for anything. It can be for tonifying your body. It can be for detoxification. We can use panchakarma to help perhaps heal an illness. But the principal idea is that over time, the body gets overwhelmed with toxicity. Ama, we call it. So panchakarma was a methodology for first getting rid of any ama that was present in the system. And then once we get rid of that to the best that we can, then we can begin to rebuild the system in a way that brings more ojas, meaning more stability, more immune support, more strength, more resilience, the ability to resist pathogens, psychic pathogens even. So panchakarma was... I've heard a couple of myths about it, so I don't want to say this as if I know it as fact, but the myth I've heard, and it's a fun one, is that originally panchakarma was mostly for the royalty and the wealthy, because it was so involved, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's you do a lot of oil-based therapies where they massage you down with 2 or even 4, practitioners would massage your body in oil, and you would receive maybe even oil enemas to help detoxify the system, and then they would prepare these beautiful cloth bags full of sacred toasted herbs wrapped in butter, and then they would, slap them on your body, and you would just receive all these bizarre and beautiful treatments. And so originally it was something reserved for royalty, but now, and in my opinion, it still kind of is, because they're expensive,
mm-hmm.
right? But, panchakarma is the forever young treatment.
Mm.
It's just to help you get rid of all the gunk and come back into your vitality.
And so you offer, now if somebody wants to kind of do get a one-on-one treatment
mm-hmm.
going with you,
mm-hmm.
what does that look like? Do you set
mm-hmm.
up a diet plan for them?
Mm-hmm.
Do you prescribe herbs? How does that work?
Yeah, it's more a general assessment of health and what's going on, and I try to help people learn how to manage their prana, which is their energy. And so we can work on a number of levels, whether it be diet, which is a huge way that we can build our connection to prana and build our prana in a healthy way. And also meditation and pranayama and how you can begin to work with energy when you sit. It's also related to our emotions, as we spoke before. In Ayurveda, we understand that there's not a separation between the mind and the heart. In fact, the mula, which means the root of the mind is the heart. And vice versa, the root of the heart is the mind. They're like one channel. Whatever we do to one, we do to the other. And so whatever we do to the mind, we do to the body. And so the Ayurvedic practitioner would help, almost like a shaman in the best of cases, like a shamanic journey. You know, what they would look at you not only as somebody who was suffering from constipation or a rash or fibromyalgia or obesity or whatever particular dis-ease you're dealing with, but also as a person who was going through perhaps an emotional turmoil or a divorce or a heartbreak or an overwhelm. So we work on I would work with you on a number of levels. Panchakarma, going back though quickly, I think is mostly appropriate when you're truly working with an Ayurvedic doctor, which I am not. And so, just so people at home understand, go get an Ayurvedic massage. It's called Abhyanga. You can get them from someone that, you know, has been trained in Ayurvedic body work. They're amazing. People should go get one of those just to relax and have that sort of health maintenance. But if you are interested in Panchakarma, seek out a really amazing Ayurvedic doctor, because when you do begin to do these intense therapies that can involve purgation and, you know, clearing of toxicities that have been held for years and years and years, you definitely want to work with someone who's a doctor.
Great. Well, I think, you know, we've talked about some ways that you can really incorporate Ayurveda, some principles of Ayurveda, into your life right now, like making some ginger tea, which is what I'm going to do, all the way up to deciding that you really want to kind of give your health over to the science of Ayurveda and do longer cleanses.
Absolutely.
And we'll definitely have some links to a dosha quiz, a couple dosha quizzes, and some amazing resources for you here in the podcast and the blog below. So, Katie, thanks so much.
Thank you. Absolutely. It's my pleasure, as usual.
Namaste.
Thank you, Jess. Namaste.
That was part one of three with our Guru Expert Series, Gurus in the Garden with Katie Silcox, the beautiful para yogini. She studies with my teacher, Rod Stryker, Yoga Rupa Rod Stryker, and I'm going to make some ginger water right now. So easy. Let me tell you, I had this interview with Katie. It was a couple of weeks ago, and I have been making ginger water. I drink it hot. I put it in a container. I put it in the fridge. I've added some peppermint to it. I've added some honey to it, and it is so good, and it makes me feel so wonderful. So definitely, definitely some of these tips that Katie has suggested. Tongue scraping. I'm doing tongue scraping now. You wouldn't believe what comes off of your tongue when you wake up in the morning. So all of these things, all of these techniques to get us to kind of connect with that light, you know, pull the veil back, pull the toxins off of your tongue so you can see more clearly. Looking forward to talking more with Katie. We're going to be talking about Tantra and also the Divine Feminine in the other two podcasts. So if you're just listening to this for the first time, stay tuned. Lots more coming from Katie. Make sure you check out her website, healthyhappysexylife.com. Where is my guru? Leading you back to you.